You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Welcome on a Friday. My apologies to the long bumper music. It's not a bad song, though. Flowrida. Anyway, greetings on a Friday. Welcome to All Marine Radio, Friday edition. Up at 29 Palms yesterday. A place that was my home for, two and a half, 3 years, something like that. My son lived up there. My oldest son, Johnny Boy, lived up there. And my daughter, Catherine, was born there. And my grandson, Finn, was born there as well. So actually a couple rooms down from where Catherine was born. So anyway, 29 Palms, always fun to go to. If you don't have to, I enjoyed living there. You know, if you're married and have kids, it's a two-minute commute to work. And you get to do the best training in the Marine Corps. You can always train your unit. So, went up there and was a guest of the 7th Marine Regiment, Colonel Ellison, who I met in Afghanistan in, 2010. And, went up there yesterday. They have a, exactly the title of it. I'm looking for it. He and Sergeant Major Pompous, the 7th Marines, I want to say they do, they have something called the Ripper Sergeants Academy. And they get their sergeants together every Thursday afternoon at 1500, and they do PME. And so I was asked to come up and do post-traumatic winning. And anyway, about the Sergeant Major, he was in Afghanistan, and he was with 1-6. They departed just before we got there in September of 2010. And then they were replaced actually by 2-6, by Colonel Ellison, who had, as a lieutenant colonel, had 2nd Battalion, 6th Marines. But just good dudes. I don't even do it justice when I say good dudes. They're great guys. And, you know, they've got a shit ton of experience in leading Marines in a variety of venues. And it's really interesting having a discussion about, excuse me, about how critical the importance are, of sergeants to the Marine Corps, to a unit, and how they sit as, and why they've always been such an influential group, right? One, working every day with Marines, but senior enough and experienced enough to really bring concepts and ideas, to young Marines, and enough experience to restrain some of our more enthusiastic instincts. So it's really interesting to talk to them about their belief in terms of the significance of sergeants to the performance of the 7th Marine Regiment and why they're investing so heavily in sergeants. So it was interesting to talk to them. And then, as always, the experience of doing post-traumatic winning with groups is the coolest. You go ahead and, in any group, as you present it, there's certain people that stand out in you, whether it be the way they pay attention, or maybe they catch your eye reacting to something. And then afterwards, you know, the Marines come up and they want to talk to you. And, you know, depending on their life experience, you know, one of the comments you get is, it felt like you were talking specifically to me here today. And I know you've heard me say that before, because it's a comment that you get relatively often when I do post-traumatic winning. And it's just, it's a life that's been filled with, you know, or not filled, which is the wrong way to articulate that, but a life that has been touched by trauma and significant trauma, and somebody who's looked for answers and hasn't found, you know, good answers, but has considered the same questions that post-traumatic winning poses. And so they'll come up afterwards and they'll talk to you and they'll say, holy shit, you know, I've thought about these things, and, you know, you're so much further down the road than I am relative to this. And I say, yeah, but look, somebody escorted me down the road, and this is kind of the embodiment of a lot of people that I've spoken to about this kind of stuff, and it's certainly not my original thoughts. And so it's really cool, the conversations that you have afterwards. And yesterday happened to be with sergeants, and then their enthusiasm to be able to take the tools, the Warrior Wellness Octagon, the three goals and the eight commandments of post-traumatic winning, and to share those, you know, and you can do it right away. And, hey, sir, this thing's online. There's even an automated version of the Octagon that does the math for you, and then they all start laughing. So yesterday was another awesome event in a string of great events that I've done. The other thing I want to talk about is, and I'll put the pictures in the post, and that I put up for this, but and I'm looking at the pictures now. So everybody's regimental CP is a little bit of a history event, right? So if you look at the 7th Marines, I Love Me stuff on their wall, for lack of a better term, I mean, it's this incredible history of the regiment, right? A regiment who has seen incredible, you know, history in World War II, Korea, Vietnam. And so there's a picture on the wall, right, that has Chesty Puller as a regimental commander, and it has Marines from each battalion standing at camp. I want to say, hold on, let me see where the picture's taken. Right, he was a Major Lewis B. Puller, 1st Battalion, 7th Marines. And so this picture was taken at New River in the fall of 1941 at a tent camp where 7th Marines was being, where 7th Marines was living at the time before they headed west and stayed west for the rest of their history. So yeah, you see pictures like that, just old Marine Corps historical pictures. But the coolest picture was the one Sergeant Major Pompos told showed me. He's like, hey, check this one out if you like history. And it's a spreadsheet that's drawn in hand that sits on their wall, okay? And at the top of it, it says Battle of Guadalcanal, 7th, and then underneath that, this is all written in hand, right? You could tell that somebody used a ruler when they wrote it, too. 7th Marines engagements from September 18th, 1942 to December 17th, 1942. Now, in the left column, it says action, name, and place. The second column, it says date. The third column says unit commander. The next column says sector commander. The next column says battalion commander. The next column says enemy killed, equipment captured, and then unit. All right, so those are all the columns. And this stuff is all written by hand by Marines of the regiment. And so it gives certain date. And the one that catches my eye, certainly, is you see a number in terms of number killed, 1,462. Yeah, no shit. And then you see another note above the sector commander, Sergeant John Bazelone, Medal of Honor, was that night. You imagine that? A regiment, right, in this case a battalion, kills 1,462 Japanese soldiers that night. And it's just cool as hell to go down the list. So I'll post this. Then at the bottom it says, total Japs killed from September 18th, 1994-December 17th, 1942. And then it says, information on this chart was compiled by Captain Victor H. Street after 37's arrival in Melbourne, 12 January 1943, from data accumulated on Guadalcanal. And the total number of Japanese soldiers killed, 2,323, more than 50% on the night Sergeant Bazelon wins, is awarded his Medal of Honor. And there's a couple other notes. Captain Victor Street became 3rd Battalion S3 on 14 October 1942 upon the death of Captain Jacob Joseph, who was killed in action. Captain Street retired as a lieutenant colonel. And it's there's just this handwritten document. It's amazing about that. That was compiled in, as it says, in 1942, after the regiment went to Australia. So very cool stuff. So, my trip yesterday, to 29 Palms. Stuff that never gets old. And again, I'd been a part of that regiment. As a company commander in 3rd Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion. I was a part of Regimental Combat Team 7 and worked, 50 yards, 60 yards from the regimental CP. And so my home for a part of my career. So it was a great honor and privilege. But, you know, it's just the things you see there in the regimental area. And then the other thing, I mean, always sobering, and you see it in most regimental CPs, is all the dog tags of the Marines that have been killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that's not a small pile. And you see that, and was there for some of it. And you look at that, and it's always sobering and a reminder of, why people are committed to being better. And the cost of when you're not better. So not easy, not easy. Anyway, but my thanks to Sergeant Major, Pompous and the regimental commander. Yeah, Kyle Ellison, Colonel type. And he's giving that regiment up here in the next couple months. And, good luck, to him wherever he's headed. They're both good guys. And it was very cool. You're standing against the wall as they speak to the sergeants of the regiment and the things they say, and it makes you feel good about, the country. It makes you feel good about the Marine Corps and all the rest of that. So anyway, something else. Oh, I'm going to put something up on the internet that I want you to take a look at. My son, Patrick, even though he's out of the Marine Corps, is still not over it. And I don't think he'll ever be. Patrick loves reading about the Marine Corps. He loves the history of the Marine Corps. He loves the courage and selflessness. And I think it's something that's always moved him. Now, I just put up on the website a moment ago, what looks to be the segment for this hour, but it's not, because there's no audio attached to it. So if you're looking for the audio, you won't find it there. The headline reads, says news and commentary, thoughts on sharing post-traumatic winning with the sergeants of the 7th Marine Regiment and a burial at sea. So if you click on that, Patrick sent me a video this morning. He's 3 hours ahead of me, right? And I've never seen anything like it in my life. And very sobering to watch it. And if you click on, you'll see in blue, you'll see a hyperlink that says here. It's a burial at sea of a gunner who was killed in an aircraft on a mission. And what you see is you see that gotta be medical people, but you see them fingerprinting the body that's still strapped in to its seat in the on the aircraft. And there's a piece of canvas thrown over the part of the cockpit that the gunner sits in, right? The aft end of the cockpit. And as as these sailors go about their business. The aircraft is then taken and it's pulled to the aft end of the USS Essex, and then they do a memorial service. And in the memorial service, you see, I don't know if it's the commanding officer of the ship or who, and I don't know, there might be 100 sailors assembled around. And they hold their memorial service, and at the end of the memorial service, the gunner, along with the aircraft, are both pushed into the ocean, and the memorial service stands there until it disappears under the water. I've never seen anything like it in my life, and it's very sobering to watch it. Very cool and reassuring to see the care that sailors take throughout all of this. And so I put it in this hour's post. I would tell you to take a look at it. It's really, I mean, I've never seen anything like it in my life. Bearing a warrior, an American warrior, who was killed in action in World War II, off the fantail of a United States aircraft carrier with, and I say 100, when you look at it, it's easily more than that. It's maybe 200, 300 sailors on the back of the fantail of a ship, heads bowed. I don't know if that's the chaplain who's speaking, but you'll see different shots of people standing at the position of modified parade rest, heads down, as they render honors to a fallen American warrior. But I Patrick sent me that, and I watched it this morning, and I thought, wow, I should share this with everybody. So take a look at that when you get a chance. They just let me give you also a reminder that on Monday you're gonna hear an interview that I'll do with Brigadier General Dale Alford, who's the commanding general of Task Force Southwest. And I kind of teased it yesterday, but get a chance to talk to him and ask him about how things are going in Afghanistan. So excited and fired up to do that. And Dale Alford is one of those guys who all my friends have known for years, and for whatever reason, he and I never crossed paths. But he's got a remarkable career, and in that career, at every rank he's ever held, he's gone to war at that rank. I've never heard of that in my life. Every rank he's held, he's gone to war. Yeah, so I was joking yesterday, like, so we're getting ready to go to something, and somebody looks around and says, hey, do we have Alford? Is he here? No. All right. Get him on the force list. He's got to go. We don't go without Alford. I mean, no shit. You know, Panama, Desert Storm, everything, Liberia, all these things that anybody would be have been excited to be in one of them, right? Alford's in all of them. Yeah, it's crazy. So you're gonna get a chance. So write that down. Make sure you don't miss the show on Monday, and you'll get a chance to hear him. And most exciting is to be able to hear somebody explain, right, Afghanistan, I mean, straight from the horse's mouth. And that's what one of the things I love about this job is being able to talk to people about issues, and hopefully in an adult way, to do it in an intelligent manner, and then ask for the footnotes. Hey, well, what about this? Hey, well, what about the economic piece? What about, you know, what do the people that you bump into say about, you know, what they want relative to peace, what that deal looks like. Explain what the reality is going to be beyond a peace accord and a residual force that would stay. And then explain to us, what does fighting look like now? How effective is the Afghan? And anybody who worked in the Helmand province, we worked with the 215th Corps. So how are they doing? How do we support them? How does that work? So anyway, on Monday, you get a chance to hear all that. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited about that. So we should make this official. It's Friday. Whitney Houston sings the national anthem. Good morning to you. Not bad. And this is dedicated to the sergeants that I met with yesterday. And, you know, it's a shame that you can't be in like a little like the flying nun on my shoulder and see them, meet them. And you would feel good about you'd feel good about the country. You'd feel good about young people because an impressive group. So this is dedicated to them, and with great appreciation for sitting there on a Thursday afternoon for a couple hours. And more importantly, I hope that you learned something about trauma, about living with trauma, about leading people that have been affected by trauma, how you can touch their lives forever, And I hope that that somehow or other something that you heard yesterday inspired you to go out and change the lives of others, because that's what post-traumatic winning is. It's about being a leader in spite of the trauma that's darkened your doorstep. It's about touching the lives of other people and changing their lives. So this dedicated to the sergeants of the 7th Marine Regiment and Regimental Combat Team 7.
Our flag comes from You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
75 years ago, you know what was one of the regiments he was talking about? 7th Marine Regiment, man. Yeah, the storied 7th Marine Regiment. I got an email. Mac, I love that kind of stuff. Don't forget to post the picture that you're talking about in this hour's post. I can't wait to see that. Yeah, it's like one of those one-of-a-kind things that you don't see, right? Something hand-drawn in the aftermath of an event by Marines that were there, right? Complete with the flaws of doing it by hand. Cool. All right, time for us to take a look at the news. There's 3 weather alerts in Quantico. What's up with that? All right. Yeah, I don't really know, but we'll find out. Currently, at the crossroads of the Marine Corps in Quantico, Virginia. Oh, it's windy. Currently, rain showers and 71. There's actually 4 weather alerts there. Gale warning, a marine weather statement, small craft advisory, and a local pollen alert. So it means it's windy. If you're going to go out on the Potomac, it's probably a little bit more risk than you want to take. So, raining in 71 there. At Camp Lejeune, it is cloudy in 77. in 29 Palms, sunny in 78. It got up to 95 while I was there yesterday. But, you know, 95 in 29 Palms is nice. I know, it's like, what? Yeah, it's warm, but it's nice. Kent Pendleton, clouds in 58. Okinawa, dark, cloudy in 74. In the Al Anbar province of Iraq, it is sunny in 76 late in the day. And in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, where Task Force Southwest does its business, commanded by Brigadier General Dale Alford, who you will hear here on Monday, it is cloudy early in the evening and 73 degrees. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, where Jack and Joe have gone back to sleep, it is cloudy and 61 degrees. Looking for a high today of 78 degrees? What? What happened? I'm sorry, 69 degrees. 68 tomorrow and 67 on Sunday. I thought it was supposed to be in the 70s. What happened? Like the weather people know what they're talking about anyway. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll check some news headlines. A new sergeant major has been nominated or selected. But we do that before we confirm the commandant. What happens if the commandant doesn't get confirmed? Who picks that guy? Anyway, so evidently, I don't know. All right, we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you are promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Colleen started working here a month ago. She works down at in Newport Beach on the pier at a fast food place. That's right. Give her the same advice that I give everybody. Hey, show up for work 10 minutes late. Have you be ready to work? The chef texting me. The chef, since the show went to 2 hours, the chef rolls back an hour, right? Does he? Yes, he rolls back an hour. But the last few weeks we taped it, because of either me traveling or something else. And so we're now just reconciling it. We'll talk about him when we get there. Oops. So back to Colleen. So yeah, Colleen, show up 5-10 minutes early for work with a smile on your face, your uniform on, and be ready to go, and watch how fast you get promoted. That's how low the bar is today. Don't be walking in 5 minutes late. Oh, I couldn't find my keys. Oh, traffic. Don't be that jackass. And do that for the rest of your life, and you're going to be the CEO of something. Yeah, that's how low the bar is. And then when you find somebody else who's getting there 10 minutes early, show up 15 minutes early, right? So Colleen goes to work. And when the weather gets nice, Newport Beach, she makes decent money and tips. She was all fired up. Yeah. Dad, look at this. I made $50. Congratulations, Colleen. Now you can start paying for some of your shit. What? What do you mean? Yeah, don't worry about it. And then I took her driving last Friday. We drove down to, she'd never been on the freeway, right? Or the interstate, depending on what part of the country you live in. So I said, come on, time for you to get on the interstate. She's like, what? I'm like, yeah. So we're getting on the 405 here in Southern California. I'm like, all right, unless you want us both to get dead, this thing's got to go faster than 45, all right? So step on it. And I'll tell you what, I have a Nissan Frontier pickup truck. You could be going 90 in that thing, and it feels like you're going 50. It has a smoother ride than most cars I know. So anyway, we drove down, I don't know, San Juan Capistrano is about 20, 25 minutes from here. Yeah, Colleen bombing down the interstate. So there you go, part-time jobs, learning how to drive. Holy shit. Exactly. The here's an email. Wow, Colleen has a job now. Where has the time gone? I remember your excitement and a bit of trepidation when you announced on the air that you and Susan were expecting another baby. Oh, my God. Well, Colleen wasn't exactly planned, right? And I was 45 when we had her. And I was a bit stunned, honestly. Like, what? Like, our youngest was 10, right? And so, you know, you're like, okay, in X number of years, you know, she's going to be in college and then this is going to happen. All of a sudden, you go back to zero. But I will tell you this. It's one of the coolest things that's ever happened in my life and the lives of our entire family. It was having a kid when you're older is interesting. And one, you know, you're going to do it again for the fourth time. So you're pretty comfortable with it. But the coolest part clearly was our other kids were all old enough to help and to watch and to understand and to share that experience with them and watch them, right, watch them react to it. And, hey, Dad, Colleen, she did a new trick today. Okay, look, she's not a dog, okay? She doesn't do tricks. Oh, whatever, right? She's like, what the hell? So, so Colleen, no, she just, and the other kids, you know, as you can imagine, took her everywhere. She's in Catherine's yearbook, you know, and the boys would take her with them and, you know, and just take her along when they would be doing stuff. And, you know, she always got a lot of attention. The other thing you could see was with that, you know, with your youngest, with all that, you know, stimulation, with all that conversation, you know, I mean, Colleen, you know, she was like 7 going on, you know, 18. And so she's always a funny little kid. But no, I would tell you, if you're contemplating having a kid in your 40s, do it. It's just raising kids to me is the greatest joy in life. Two, sharing that child with your other kids and then them being able to learn how to raise a child and the importance of consistency, the importance of discipline. And, you know, when Colleen says the F word, right, that don't laugh because she's going to get it. And if you laugh, it's just going to take me longer to get that out of her. And the next time it happens and you laugh, you're going to get it too. All right. I'm not about that. So yeah, Colleen. Yeah. Colleen's about people that haven't seen her in years, like, oh, my God. And she was, you know, she would, Colleen used to sing God Bless America. Let me see if I can find it. And at the end of God Bless America, she says, done, Dad. So if I can find it, I'll play it. And people, like, you know, what did they remember about God Bless America? They remember Colleen saying, they remember Colleen saying, done, Dad. So here's Colleen singing God Bless America when she's like 5 or 6.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans, wipe us home. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home. Dun, dun.
Yeah, so of all the things that people remembered about that, right, the thing they remembered most was the last part of that, done, Dad. And I used to get people coming up to me, I'd be someplace, and they would see me, and they would say, "This must be Colleen." And I'd say, "Yep, this is Colleen. And they'd say, "Colleen, I listened to you sing God Bless America." And I mean, she's like, you know, 6 years old at the time. And it was always funny. But yeah, Colleen singing
God Bless America.
Yeah, so here is the whole enchilada now. This is what it sounds like today. And then you'll hear her sing.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans, white was home. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home. Dun, dun.
So, you know how when your kids learn songs and at that age and they just sing them over? Oh my God. She was like, that thing was on a loop in her head. And so she shared it with the rest of us. And so I was in the house and I said, "Hey, come here." And I handed her a microphone, which she loved. In fact, I had a microphone stand and I put a microphone in it. Oh my God. She played with that thing for hours. So Colleen, she sings it once and I said, "That's not good enough. Do it again." And so she did it again. And then like she ends it and then she looks at me, she goes, "Done, Dad." And, but anyway, yeah, Colleen. Let me just go over a couple news stories, and then we'll take a break, and then the chef will join us, and we'll. I want to talk with the chef about sautéing stuff, because I still have not mastered that, and I need to. I make pork chops in a mushroom gravy sauce. It's Campbell's soup cream mushroom soup with condensed milk. Combine that with the juice of the pork chops. I don't know if F-18 guy's listening, but if he's listening, he should call in because he made it. He was losing his mind. He actually threw some fresh mushrooms in it and some more onions, so he messed with it. But it's great. But I have a tendency to overcook the pork chops in there. Now, one of the things I've learned about grilling or about cooking in general is if you want it to taste better, buy better quality pork or steak, right? That's number one. So I did that. And then two, but there's an element of how much do you brown a pork chop, right? And then how is it going to cook as it sautés? And because there's some stuff like a crock pot stuff, you know, can be cooking at low temperature all day, and most of that stuff is fall off the bone incredible. Right? Very tender. So I'm not sure when you're not using a crock pot, I'm not sure where the line is, right? So anyway, I want to ask him about that. But so we'll talk to him. We'll talk to him in a few minutes. Next Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps has been named. He will be the 19th Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, and he is Sergeant Major Troy Black. So there's a good-looking, motivating picture of him, right? Looks like he could be a World War I Marine. He's a hard-looking dude. He is currently Sergeant Major of Manpower and Reserve Affairs. Black enlisted in the Marine Corps in 1988. He's been the Sergeant Major of Officer Candidate School, the 11th MEU, Marine Expeditionary Unit, and the 1st Marine Logistics Group. He deployed to Operation Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Enduring Freedom, which is Afghanistan. And he's had numerous MU and Fleet anti-terrorism security company deployments. His awards include the Legion of Merit with a Gold Star, the Bronze Star with Combat V, the Meritorious Service Medal with 2 Gold Stars, Navy Marine Corps Achievement Medal with a Gold Star, the Combat Action Ribbon with 2 Gold Stars. Now, other things I noticed in his picture, okay, is that he wears a Battle E. Now, at first I was going to say that he served on sea duty, but I've since rethought that. Could have received it as part of a Marine Expeditionary Unit. So, anyway. So, new Sergeant Major for the Marine Corps. And so, interesting. Somebody mentioned to me yesterday, interesting that he's been nominated before the Commandant's been approved by Congress. So, that kind of interesting. Top stories of the Marine Corps. I'll read you a few headlines. Saving Private Ryan is headed back to theaters for the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And I'll tell you what, if you've never seen Saving Private Ryan, I don't know that I've ever seen a more... I remember the first time I started to watch that, I got up and walked out of the room. And my son's like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I don't want to watch that. That's a little bit too real." And the noises in that, the audio in that, are the sounds of it. And it's pretty disturbing, honestly. Another story I want to hit is Marine Corps doesn't specify privatized housing data in recent living condition query. What does that mean? In an effort to find out how its personnel with dependents feel about their housing, the Marine Corps recently launched an effort to visit homes and assess conditions. But family advocates are questioning why more information isn't being provided about Marines' conditions in privatized housing, specifically. Officials can't provide information about how many of those Marines who requested visits were living in privatized housing. Their outreach efforts include Marines living off base, as well as in privatized housing, as well as reservists. And since about 70% of the active duties Marines live off base, and virtually all reservists live off base, these numbers can't be attributed solely to privatized housing landlords. Marine leaders say they reached 99% of Marines with families in their efforts to find out more about the scope of the housing problems. But issues raised in recent months by military families in media reports have centered around privatized housing. Families have testified about mold, lead paint, termites, mice, and other issues, and their frustrations with trying to get privatized housing companies to fix those problems. They've also said that they've gotten no help from the military when they've asked for intervention. Let me tell you, I keep hearing about this, and I heard about it yesterday? No, day before. I got a phone call, and saying essentially the same thing. You know, the base commander is not our advocate. For whatever reason, the base commanders seem to be more connected to the housing company than they are the people that they're supposed to be the advocate for. And which leaves me scratching my head. The other things I've heard is that, hey, if you're going to sign a contract now, they'll offer you money in return for signing a "we won't litigate" or "we're going to move you to a new house, and in exchange for that, we'll give you, you know, $5,000 and we'd like you to sign this that you won't litigate." So there's all, I get these emails on a regular basis. It's like, you got to be kidding me. The Navy and the Marine Corps have been contacting every sailor and Marine to give them the opportunity to request a home visit. The Marine Corps Commandant went a step further, requiring commands to also contact Marines living in off-base civilian housing. We applaud the Marine Corps for reaching out to all families to assist them with problems they're having with their housing, said Kelly Ruska, Government Relations Director for the National Military Family Association. Those numbers, however, aren't helpful, she said, because, quote, we can't distinguish between active duty and reservists and between who's living in privatized housing and who's living off base. We hope that when the Marine Corps conducts its survey, they will ask these questions. Yeah, it's a little bit disturbing because these issues got raised, and let me tell you how the game gets played, right? The game gets played, right? These housing companies have gone down this trail before, and they string the issue out and string the issue out. They want to retain control of it. So in my opinion, two critical things have to happen. There has to be an independent organization / contractor that's supervised by the base commander that certifies repairs and certifies a house is suitable to be inhabited by the next tenant. And that contractor is not paid for by the housing provider. It is paid for by the base. So that when the base looks at you and says that house is suitable to be inhabited, we've inspected it, you know that it comes from an independent contract that gets paid by the DOD and not by the housing provider. That independence needs to happen to keep the privatized housing people on their toes. Otherwise, they will maximize their own profit at the expense of the tenant. It happens over and over and over again. Let me just tell you, I did an interview with a woman by the name of Shelley Federico, who went through this in 2010, 2011. And the guy who's now head of Lincoln Military Housing is the guy that's in the video that CNN did about it. He says virtually the exact same things in 2019 that he did in 2010-11. It's amazing to watch. It's amazing to watch. And I'll tell you this. If you leave it to them to reform themselves, you are going to get what you get, which is you're going to get eyewash till the problem goes away, and then they'll go back to the way they've historically been. All right, top five stories in early bird, then we'll take a break, then the chef's going to join us. Number one, the Air Force Secretary is the one that raised the ethical concerns about the acting Secretary of Defense. Since his early days in office, Patrick Shanahan has butted heads with the Secretary of the Air Force, Heather Wilson, over the Pentagon's future space architecture. But a new Inspector General investigation into the acting Secretary of Defense released Thursday cleared him of any wrongdoing in regards to pushing products from his previous employer, Boeing, shows the tensions existed at a different level than previously reported. Of the 33 witnesses interviewed by the IG's office, including former Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, the Joint Chiefs, and other top Pentagon officials, Wilson was the only one to raise red flags about Shanahan's behavior. Quote, none of the other witnesses told us that they had any concerns regarding his adherence to his ethical objections. Many reported that Mr. Shanahan was attentive to his ethical obligations. While Wilson raised concerns about Shanahan's actions, others in the Pentagon interviewed by the IG noted that the former executive was preemptive in avoiding that anything that could be construed as a conflict of interest. Air Force Chief of Staff David Goldfein, for instance, said there were two cases when the KC-46 tanker started to stray into a conversation, and that Shanahan actually interjected and said, we have to stop the conversation, and one of those times he actually got up and said, hey, I do understand you need to talk about this, so I'm going to depart. But Wilson, who also announced her intention to leave the Pentagon next month and return to academia, has repeatedly butted heads with Shanahan over space issues, in particular over the formation of the Space Force and the Space Development Agency over the last 8 months. Sources familiar with the relationship describe it as tense between two people who seem to have personal distaste for one another. Nice. The housing people have it in for Secretary Wilson as well. She is going to work for the University of Texas, El Paso. One of the major benefactors of the University of Texas of El Paso is one of the people who holds one of the contracts, one of the big contracts for base housing. Number two, how do you like that, linking those issues together? Two, three looming questions about the selective services future, right? Again, this political dance stays in the news, right? Hey, combat's open to everybody, so everybody registers, right? Wrong. Why not? Women will get pissed, and if I vote for it, I'm going to get that jammed down my throat or up my ass in the next election. I don't need that. So we got to somehow or other get the X-Acto knife out and do away with it. And that's what will happen. There will be no draft because politically they won't go there. Number three, is Cyber Command really being more aggressive in cyberspace? Earlier this year, Congress and the White House granted the U.S. Cyber Command a range of new authorities, and in the months since, national security experts have said the DOD will be more aggressive in cyberspace, leading attacks against bad actors who have stolen intellectual property or against those who are attempting to influence American elections. Question, are they really doing that? Who the hell knows, right? But a new narrative with additional nuance now surrounds that discussion. Rather than thinking that the United States is being more aggressive, national security experts and government officials say the Cyber Command has more flexibility and that the authorities allow for offensive action in the name of defensive purposes. During peacetime, we're not seeking to escalate. We're not trying to be aggressive in behavior. We are trying to defend those that breach norms to be able to enact consequences, according to Ed Burke, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Cyber Policy. Adversaries have been increasingly active in the so-called gray zone. In this space, quote, in this space, there is going to be constant contact. There is going to be continuous engagement. The question we have to ask ourselves is, what are the acceptable things below that threshold of armed conflict, said Emily Golden, who serves as a policy planning staff for the Office of the Secretary of State. Come on, figure it out, man. You let these idiots just run amok and you're going to get that. All right, we'll take a break. More of Almighty Radio coming up next. The chef joins us, so whatever you do, don't touch the dial. This great program continues, and the chef actually on the road today. So yeah, don't touch that dial. More of this fine program coming up next on a Friday edition, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.